One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary is Tack Theratrix.
I am Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
Afrodita!
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the CS hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you're watching us on Rockfin or Rumble or listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks a million. We appreciate the support. Couldn't do it without you. If you haven't rated the show already, we'd appreciate a 5-star review if you think we've earned it, because we are fighting this algorithm battle out there. Our sponsors, they make the show happen. We've got some new ones. I'm excited for you guys to get a chance to try Brain Supreme. Oh my goodness. I've now had the pleasure of trying a couple of the mushroom microdose capsules that Brain Supreme sent over to me, and I have to say I am a huge fan. I really enjoyed it. The ones I took, there's two batches, that one's for working out and one is for more concentration. I took the kind before working out for the last 2 days, and I have found that where I notice it is that I normally would want to be done with the gym, and this has allowed me to kind of keep going a little bit longer and a little bit longer. So if you're somebody that's interested in this, if you're somebody that works out or is interested in focusing for a long period of time, I would suggest you just take a look. Go to brainsupreme.co, not .com. Some band has that one. But if you find brainsupreme.co, take a look. See what you think, because this is relatively new. It's mushroom microdoses. There's a variety of mushrooms in there, not just psilocybin. And there's some real benefits here. It's the cat is out of the bag with regards to mushrooms. So take a look. The link down in the show notes will lead you there. BrainSupreme.co. If you find something you like, the discount code on your way out the door is macro. And also to David Wolf, we are excited to have David Avocado Wolf on the program a couple weeks ago, and also to have him as a sponsor. So if you are interested, davidwolf.com, that's Wolf, W-O-L-F-E.com. We have to keep you guys on your toes. We have Wolf that's spelled differently, or you have brainsupreme.co, but not .com. So you're going to have to pay attention. And if you had some Brain Supreme, or if you had some of what David Avocado Wolf is selling, you would have the mental acuity to follow the directions that I am laying out for davidwolf with an E.com. And also BrainSupreme.co. Go check them out. Go see what they're doing over there. They have amazing stores that are selling products that will actually help you. If you find something that you like in either one of them, the promo code on your way out the door is macro. So, okay, let me set up this episode the proper way, because for those of you who don't know Chris Graves, first of all, how dare you? And second of all, you will after this one, okay? But I'll give you a little bit of insight into the alternative media with regard to like podcasts and people that do a lot of this stuff for a while. When you get to a topic that you're getting into and you've gone as far as you can go, but you know there's still more, the person that everybody reaches out to find out what's more is Chris Graves, just so you know. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, the great, maybe the greatest researcher out there, Chris Graves. Hey, Chris, how are you? Good to see you again.
Hello, Charlie. Thank you for that. And I hope to live up to that. But
you are too humble. You're really fantastic. I know that if there's something that I found out there, I'll run it by you and you'll say, oh, yeah, that's for sure. That's happened. But have you also heard of this and that and this video and this document and this guy telling this story? And you get done, and you go, well, right. I thought I had it all figured out. And then I talked to Chris and apparently I didn't know anything. So we all appreciate the work that you do, Chris. And for those of you out there that are hoping to, if you like this sort of information, you like the things that we're doing, or you like the type topics that Chris is telling you about, like, this is like listener supported here. So if you're in a position where you've got more money than time, throw some bones Chris's way. We all need a little help here, especially when we're up against it here. They made it difficult for us to make a living doing this, but we love the hunt. We love the topics. We love figuring out. We love busting these bastards with where what they've been doing over the years. And I'll tell you, Chris, you and I have been trying to have this conversation on about four different occasions, and for a variety of reasons, it has not happened. So I'm really glad that we're going to finally do this. It's going to be one of those examples where you go, man, I'm glad we waited. I mean, it was frustrating that we couldn't get it all set up, and you were trying to do it, and I was trying to do it, and we wanted it to. But we're going to talk about Columbine today. And this is one that is really the OG of school shootings. I mean, unless you want to get into some Operation Gladio Belgium stuff back in the 70s. But in America, this is really the one that jumped off the page and started this whole thing. And you and I, Chris, have talked about this. We've been talking about this for a couple of years. So when did you get into Columbine when it happened, or was this something that retroactively you kind of said, well, if 9/11 was nonsense, then what about Columbine? How did this work for you?
Well, this kind of leads up to 9/11 for me. I mean, I think someone else may have coined the term a long time ago, but I feel like this is the 9/11 of like not only school shootings, but spree shootings in general. Mm-hmm. And I know there were multiple ones before, like way before, even going back to Charles Whitman in 1966, right. The UT tower shooter. So it's been around as a concept, I guess. Like, is it basically a concept, like fear inducing, that kind of thing, mass trauma. Dave McGowan, the late great Dave McGowan, wrote about that in his work, back in the day. And he even went into Columbine too, which I got a whole bunch of my research from, was Dave McGowan. He had an article he wrote on his website, Center for an Informed America, you know, CIA, back in the day, because he had a great sense of humor, Dave McGowan. And it was called Anatomy of a School Shooter. Anatomy of a School Shooting. It was from the year 2000. So it was fairly recent after Columbine. He went through everything and he kind of broke it down. And then later on, he wrote about 9/11. He was like the first 9/11 truther on 9/12 on his website. He pretty much broke down the official story from the day before. Him and his brother Craig, who I'm in contact with frequently to this day.
Wow.
But Craig, you know, was kind of like in the shadows, like kind of thing. But he had a lot of research with Dave, his brother. But anyway, no, the thing for Columbine, I was in high school in Massachusetts at the time, and I wore a trench coat at one time, but not because of the Matrix or any of that type of stuff. I wore a trench coat because I was a huge fan of Kevin Smith, Silent Bob. He had a trench coat. And the idea was, if you're a big fat guy, it doesn't hide it all the way, but it kind of hides your body's girth or whatever.
Right.
So it makes you feel like almost like Batman with a cape, you know, like goofy crap like that. But it wasn't because I wanted to hide, you know, AK-47s underneath each side of my body or whatever.
Yeah.
So I remember when Columbine happened, I remember that day actually because of the footage and everything. So people that looked like me that wore Metallica shirts and, you know, heavy metal and stuff like that, I was never into Marilyn Manson. And apparently the two boys that were, you know, that were told were the only shooters, the only suspects. Apparently they tried to pin the Marilyn Manson thing on them.
And oh, yeah.
They were more into like the KMFD, FDM or whatever, the German rockers or whatever. I can't remember the exact name of them, but they weren't really big Marilyn Manson fans. So like video games and violent movies and music in general, like they, Marilyn Manson was kind of like pinned down with all that, that stuff, blaming the internet, which was in its infancy for the public, at least at the time. Mm-hmm. So they were, you know, and they wanted to change the movie rating system or to make it harder for people, kids to get into R-rated movies, which that's all out the door. I mean, movies aren't really a thing anymore anyway. So it doesn't work. People can watch, beheadings, you know, on the internet now, and no one seems to care about that, you know, at least like in a big public outcry kind of way. But Columbine, just to me at the time as a high school student that kind of looked the part, you know, I knew people that, you know, were depressed and things like that. And goths, I guess they got kind of in trouble for the whole Columbine thing too. But those kids weren't goths. So the thing, just all the media coverage on this one particular shooting was kind of irregular. I mean, yeah, it was a tragedy, not to take away from that, but it was weird how, you know, this school shooting got more attention than any of the ones prior to it. Almost like it was an event that was kind of cement in the nation's mind, you know, that, you know, beware the outcast, that, you know, kind of like later on, there's a correlation, kind of like when you got like 19 crazed Arabs, you know, with box cutters, you know, and this Al-Qaeda thing, Taliban, whatever you want to call it. And then later on ISIS, it's almost like these isolated groups or whatever that you find out have ties to certain intelligence and even military. And when you, the further, I was kind of a conspiracy guy, but not really. I was always interested in like the Kennedy thing, like in the late 90s. Bill Cooper, who later on went on to admit that he may have been duped with the copy of the Zapruder film that he saw, where apparently it looked like William Greer, the driver, was turning around to shoot him with a pistol. I mean, that was a big thing for a while. But Bill Cooper, he doesn't get a lot of credit, but he did go on the record on his show, The Hour at the Time, and explain that he doesn't think that it was like a real copy of the film, like a legitimate thing. He thinks it was tampered with at the time. And same with his alien agenda thing. That's kind of why he dropped the UFO thing and then concentrated more on New World Order and more ground-based militia-type crimes going on, or crimes against people, you know, that were in militias and things like that.
Yeah.
And so to be able to admit that you're wrong is kind of a big thing, in my opinion.
Sure.
He doesn't get a lot of credit for that. They like to focus on the stuff that he was talking about prior to admitting it.
Was he heavy on Columbine?
Columbine, he went on the air, and it's on YouTube, and the Hour of the Time, like on the Wayback Machine, the Internet Archive, you can hear the episode where he's broken down in tears talking about how these kids were duped, right? Because he actually found a patent, the U.S. government patent, on some kind of technology with MK Ultra, you know, leanings, you know.
Yeah.
Power of persuasion, but like literally like with frequencies and things like that. And it's on still, you can kind of find it, and I have the article somewhere and wish I had it right now, but you can see on the Hour of the Times news part of the website, you can see the patent that he was talking about.
Wow.
So he basically was reporting on it, and he was broken down in tears, and I don't think it was like an Alex Jones kind of thing, you know. My take on Alex Jones, a little sidebar, is that he basically took Bill Cooper's persona, and Bill Cooper's not here anymore to defend himself.
Right.
So, I mean, that aside, but anyway, I went way off the beaten path. But well, I was into things like UFOs and JFK a little bit when Columbine happened. The idea that it could be like a false flag, I had no idea, because we were literally 2.5 years away from 9/11. Mm-hmm. One of the biggest ones in history, if not the biggest, until maybe recent years, you know.
Yeah. But, so let's set this up for the audience, just for those that maybe don't remember, it was a while ago. This happened on 420, April 20th, 1999, Hitler's birthday. There was some, I'm sure that the media probably, if I recall, made some connections to that. Like, I'm sure they
tried to say Eric Harris was a fan of Hitler. And then you go and you look at his website that he had, which a lot of people didn't at the time, but he had like a blog, of online blog. And there's entries that contradict most of that stuff, where he was actually coming out against racists and things like that, which you never heard about on mainstream.
No. So 13 dead, 24 hurt. This was the two shooters, the two alleged only perpetrators, Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold. And I remember this too. This is the school's called Columbine. And the area here, you know, Littleton, the city is Littleton. I live in Littleton. I drive by not the actual school itself, but the street that you turn to go to down to the school every day, twice a day, you know, on my way to just about anywhere I go past this. I sent you a message before we went on, showing you that during my drive, when I drive past this and I go from Littleton, the next city I reach is Lakewood, and their city logo is a known pedophile sign.
Yeah,
and there's a lot of dark shit out here, or out in. I'm in Vegas. These are the Vegas sessions, but back when I'm home in Denver, there's a lot of stuff around that area. We've got the Denver airport that people have questions about. We have the Lockheed Martin facility that is there, that is really well known. When I'm at home, I can look out my window and see it. I mean, it's right there. So, and they're into satellites and rockets and God knows what going on over there. The only thing I know about that place is that every time I try to go, I was trying to buy distilled water at the grocery store down the street. And I asked, like, there's no distilled water. I asked the guy, like, hey, what you guys have room for? I see where it's supposed to go. You've got everything else, but no distilled. I just need one. Do you have any in the back? The guy goes, no, the Lockheed Martin guys always come down and clean us out of distilled water. So I don't know what they're doing at this facility,
but
it requires a lot of distilled water that they need to go to the grocery store and get. That's sort of a random side note. But the truth is that this area has some questions. There's military intelligence in here. The Columbine situation is one thing.
Yeah.
Later, we have a situation not too far geographically in Boulder, the JonBenet Ramsey situation. Her father had military intelligence ties there as well. And of course, I bring that up because one of the parents or the parents of these kids had military intelligence ties as well.
Wayne Harris. So, yep.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about the father of Eric Harris. Apparently, he has Eric Harris's dad was in the Air Force.
Yeah, Black Ops.
Apparently. And his son was said to have been drafted into what's known as a behavior modification program while at Plattsburgh Air Force Base. Is this something that you've heard that the kids have been brought into this, or is this still
There was some reporting by people like John Quinn. He went by the name Newshawk in the late 1990s. So I reached out to him and got him connected with our mutual friend Don Jeffries for an episode of I Protest. And, he's very hard to find because after 9/11, he basically told me that it was getting too dangerous for people like him, because now when you got like thousands of people just, getting murdered, and not to belittle something like Columbine, but let's face it, like in the grand scheme of things, as bad as that that Columbine tragedy was, 9/11 was like a world changing event. Not just a nation-changing event like Columbine was in the beginning. Wayne Harris, the reports of Eric being, MK Ultra'd or brainwashed back then can't really, as far as I've looked, can't really be substantiated. But he was in a rehabilitation program with Dylan Klebold after they got arrested for breaking into a van and stealing electronic equipment. So they had like a parole officer or the equivalent in that re-education type style program that they were court ordered to participate in. And that's where a lot of researchers speculate that, some of this programming that I personally think that, they were under the influence of something. I mean, some kind of brainwashing of some effect. And Susan Klebold, Dylan's mother, even mentioned it in her book that she wrote. And it was in a British, like a tabloid, like the Inquisitor. I think it was one of those where she had mentioned that her and her husband, they speculated, and this could be a grieving mother that doesn't want to admit that her son became a serial killer or was responsible for murders and things like that. So I'll give her that. But she made an interesting claim in the article and in the book where she speculated with her husband that Wayne Harris possibly had, brainwashing manuals in the Harris household because of his military background and everything. And things of that nature. So even Susan Klebold had speculated that.
Interesting.
Not only her son and possibly Eric were under the influence of something.
What about this school? Yeah, what about this school program? Didn't they have a deaf education program?
That's one I've been trying to get out to a lot of people for a while. 2020 even did an episode with Barbara Walters and
really?
All that. Yeah, it's on it. Yeah, believe me, like I have all these links and everything. So
I know you do.
But for anyone out there, I just don't want people to think, oh, he's just pulling it out of his behind or whatever. No,
the audience, Chris is not pulling this out of his ass. If he's talking about it, he's got evidence for it. I assure you. But go ahead.
If people want to go to YouTube and in any other platform that shows videos, there's death education. Just type in death education 2020 Columbine, like use those keywords or whatever phrases you want. And the special from 1990 should come up, and they go into this, Barbara Walters, Hugh Downs, they were the anchors of 2020 at the time in 1990. And they go into the whole death education program, which was very macabre. If you really looking back on it, and I'm surprised, I'm sure it was macabre at the time as well. It was the idea of introducing, teenagers to the concept of death and going to funerals and going to funeral homes. They even go to one in the clip. And there's a corpse, I believe, where like they don't show the kids like touching the skin of the body or whatever, but like they're in the same room with a corpse and things like that.
Right.
And it was also said, not on the special, but it was mentioned in certain articles back around the late 90s or whatever, that they were playing, they were pushing this death education thing over and over again. And actually, there were rumors. I've tried to find where it was, like, in concrete, like, evidence of Eric and Dylan writing suicide notes as a part of that class. And the idea that writing a suicide note was part of some of the death education, like, classes, like, throughout the country. This, but the idea was that the high school that they decided to hone in on for this 2020 special was Columbine High School. And they filmed there. And this is 9 years before the event, or the tragedy. So there was a lot of weird stuff. Death education. It was kind of like, it was akin to some of these heavy metal classes or whatever, like when they wanted to get, they thought that it was turning teenagers, you know, a little too rebellious, kind of like the comics code with comic books in like the 60s. They were saying that it was turning boys gay or making them violent and stuff because they liked Batman and, you know, Spider-Man, things like that. So it was a way of them re-educating, you know, the rebels, basically, you know, to take maybe that rebellious spirit away from them in a way, because there were some where they tried to get kids to not like heavy metal, and it was like classes and things. But this death education is different. This class, this blows. Yeah. They throw up the devil horns or whatever. No, but the death education thing, folks, like look it up. I wish more attention was put on it, but it was a real thing that was in multiple, like all kinds of high schools throughout the 80s and into the 90s.
Yeah. Now, and if it had just been that and it had been rolled out to a variety of schools, I would have said, well, it's a weird program, but, you know, it is
part of
life.
But what did you find? If you don't mind me asking, what did you find on the same subject, death education?
That it's a thing.
It
I just
was,
found
yeah.
that it was a thing and that it was actually being rolled out to multiple high schools. And Columbine was one of them that was like, let's incorporate this death education. Now, again, like the official story is that it was two guys that showed up with guns and started shooting everybody. But the longer version of that is that actually it was a failed bomb attempt, right? Was that the bombs were supposed to go off first and then funnel everybody out, and then they would shoot them as they came out. So it was a two-for-one, a bombing and a shooting. That's the official story?
The official story is that the survivors of the bombing would be coming out to the parking lots where the two of them would be positioned near their cars to be able to pick off any survivors running out the building. That was the official.
Okay. And they were going to use a BLEVE device, boiling liquid expanding vapor explosive device, right? That's what I read. That's what they were. Okay. So they're cooking up. They had a copy of the Anarchist Cookbook. They were making bombs, right? So they're trying to make bombs. The bombs didn't go off. Were the bombs made by them? Were the bombs made by, like, handler somewhere? Like, where does this story take a turn? Because the bombs didn't go off, right? And
nope. So only a couple in the cafeteria where you can see in the very doctored footage, by the way, that was sent to Quantico for cleanup.
Oh, good. Yeah. What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah. Holy moly. There's a Bruder film there. Anyway, that was in the news, too, at the time. I think CBS News, they reported the fact that the cafeteria footage, which was the only footage that was ever sent to the public, the other cameras from, like, other angles, which would catch other suspects and accomplices escaping, we've never seen any of that footage. And it exists. It's somewhere. But, yeah, in terms of the bombs, I personally, just going, like, through thousands of pages of the 11K, it's referred to, the police report. I mean, they put out two different ones. But the 11K was, like, the longest, I believe, or maybe 12K. Maybe I'm leaving off 1,000 there. But
no, it's listed as being called the 11K. It's 11,000 pages of documents on Columbine. That who has it? Who has access to this?
Well, they're out there. I mean, we can, the public can read them, but they weren't allowed to for a few years right after it was, you know, you had to go in person And kind of like the National Archives, it reminds me of, where you have to make an appointment and go literally to Colorado to be able to read it in a private room, kind of thing. You're not allowed to, you weren't allowed to take any materials or photocopy anything at the time. What, I mean, if it was just on the surface of what they said it was, like, why the Warren Commission, like, attempt to, you know, get the public, you know, to not be able to have access to it right away. But in the age of the internet since, you can find those police reports and the files. Interviews where people are talking about seeing up to possibly 8 shooters at a certain point.
Yeah.
8 to 10, actually. And other other people being arrested around the area. Like, there was a diversionary bomb that went off in a field right before the shooting started. So people have... Official people have speculated that they lit it and made it go off to get the attention away from the high school so they could begin their rampage. But they would have to be the ones to, if they didn't have any other help, who lit that one on Wadsworth Ave? I believe it was Wadsworth.
Yeah, that's the main street I drive down.
Yeah. So if right on the surface, and I have these clips, right, and I really wish there was a way that we could show it, but there was reports. I have a newswoman talking about how authorities have found sophisticated devices, like almost, I think, and even Bill Cooper brought this up at one point, where they talked about mercury switches being found, which is like military grade shit.
Yeah.
That's, you know, she didn't say that in the report, but she basically referred to the idea that these devices were so sophisticated that it would be almost impossible for two teenagers to have done it by themselves, you know, without any kind of help.
So if it would be impossible for two teenagers to do it by themselves, and we have dozens of witnesses saying there were multiple shooters, then who else was with them and where did they go?
Well, here's the thing. If you go through those 11,000 pages and everything, I feel like, and other people do too, that looked into this, that there were some pretty good officers there at Jefferson County, right? So when they had to do, whenever like a Freedom of Information request is released, which, you know, doesn't really happen quite a bit without a bunch of BS with it. They have to go, the people that are going to release the stuff have to go find it, and then they have to redact certain things that they might be, you know, to protect sources, things like that. I mean, that's the CIA always talks about, you know, to protect sources and information and everything like that. But a bunch of times, the other suspects that were reported by people that knew them because they were either current or former classmates of theirs, let the names drop here and there quite a bit. So a part of me, it feels like there were some decent cops there. You know, not, I mean, there's bad apples in every group, right? There were a couple of cops that talked to a friend of mine who I'll mention in a second here. That they left the force because they knew that there was some kind of cover up going on, and they didn't want to be a part of it. And they actually warned my friend that, you know, not them threatening her, but they said it would be in her best interest probably not to ever like write a book one day on what she saw, that kind of thing. And she had her phone lines tapped after, and she never changed. She never changed her story, which, and her mother backed her up too, because her mother was there during the interview, which was almost like an interrogation, because she would not change who she saw was an adult shooter with Klebold in the science hall. That was not Eric Harris. And she knew that because she had a cigarette standing right next to Eric Harris about 15 minutes before the shooting began. So she knew the difference between this military looking big shouldered, you know, guy with a buzz cut and spiky, blonde spiky hair or whatever, that was with, seen with, not just by her, but by like 6 or 7 others of this guy with a white t-shirt, and the fact that Eric Harris at a certain point takes his trench coat off and then has a white shirt on, that I don't think was a coincidence either. I think they were both wearing white shirts to kind of confuse the issue. Because if you go and you look at things in the past, like JFK assassination, Bobby Kennedy even, when you go and you look, there's other suspects that are around that match Oswald, even in the doorway. They try to say that that's not Oswald in the doorway. It's Billy Lovelady. And he looks almost like Lee Harvey Oswald. They're working in the same vicinity. There was a guy, and he was never, you know, convicted, so I won't say his actual name here, but people can find it very easy online. And my friend that I was referring to that saw the adult shooter also saw this other guy who got cited as a third shooter quite a bit. Kristen Krueger, her name is Kristen Krueger, and she wrote a book all about overcoming trauma and everything. And she goes into the third shooter at the end of her book, I believe. And she knew it wasn't Dylan or Eric because she was friends with them as well. And she knew the third guy that was shooting at her, and it wasn't Dylan Klebold, but he kind of had a resemblance to Dylan Klebold, like enough that it would confuse the issue of who were these witnesses seeing. So when you see other events where, let's say operators for lack of a different term or whatever, usually in one of these situations, they'll have people that look similar to like the scapegoats or patsies or whatever.
Like that, the guy who shot J.D. Tippit, the guy who supposed to look like Oswald, who looks like Oswald. And then they go, well, who was the guy? Describe the guy that shot the cop. Well, he looked like this. And you go, well, you're describing Oswald. And you go,
I don't know. But it's good enough to pacify the public and say, oh, they were just mistaken. This false memory syndrome BS, you know, that I go into quite a bit on in other areas. But the names are tricky because they were never convicted, but they were pointed out by dozens, if not like over 100 people. And there's names, and they're trench coat mafia, you know, type people. But there, like I said, there were others that looked like adults that were involved black ski masks too, which also makes it harder.
Yeah. So there's handlers, right? There's a group that's in addition to the group, right? It's and if I read correctly, at one point the guy who was with
Klebold
was like sort of like calming him down a little bit.
Calm him down. If you look, okay, here's the thing. I know I'm way off, but now it's all coming back. It's flooding back to the trial.
Let him cook. Let's go, baby.
Here we are. if you go back and you, like I said, in the 11K interviews and all the investigation stuff materials, you hear multiple times where people that are hiding in classrooms hear Dylan screaming at the top of his lungs, I'm gonna fucking die today, and things like that, like I wanna fucking die and shit like that. It was around, sorry for the language, but saying is it matches what my friend Jen Small, who I've interviewed a few times, and I've even done a show with her about like paranormal stuff, but we try to push that away from the Columbine stuff so people don't go, oh, they're talking about ghosts and UFOs. So I didn't want her to have to deal with, oh, here we go, you know, which doesn't, it doesn't, anyway, she's great. And she's a true, she's got more brass, you know what, than most guys that I know. Because she would not back down when the authorities were trying to convince her that she saw Eric Harris with. But Eric Harris was most likely already deceased in the library at this time. And it was down the science hall, which many survivors and witness statements, like witnesses were called in to make statements about what they saw, and many are missing. There were people like, and there were bodies, Charlie, like, of people that were moved around that Jen told me about, that were either, they were said to have been killed in the library, but their bodies were not found that way originally. Like when the evacuation, like the SWAT team scared the shit out of everybody, even more than the shooter, she said at one point. That's how violent the SWAT team people were, which, you know, it's a weird situation, whatever. Right. But as she's climbing over people in the hallway, you know, she said that, like, later on, people that she saw even exiting the building that were shot on the sidewalk were claimed to have been found murdered in the library. So who's moving bodies around and for what reason? And the idea is that if you got a school that big and you got like 8 to 10 shooters possible, like shooters, or even 5 or 6, whatever, the way you explain just 2 lone nuts, in this case it's 2, so not quite lone, is if they, most of the murders take place in this one area like the library, then all the other ones that were seen all over the school, like in other areas, that were they, the two of them wouldn't be, in terms of the timeline, they wouldn't be able to, it would make more sense to have them all put in this one centralized area.
It reminds me of Vegas shooting where there's plenty of eyewitness testimony that was like, there were shots fired in Bellagio. I know what it sounds like when a gun is being fired.
Planet Hollywood, Hooters.
Everywhere, yeah.
Luxor. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a whole, believe me, that's a rabbit hole right there, too. But what I'm saying is, if they control all the eyewitnesses of that, and we know by witness statements, I went through the Vegas documents in the same way, not as thorough, because I'm like, after a while, I'm like, it's the same thing over and over again. They're seeing military-type looking drab people, like, shooting at them, and they're running away on the ground.
On the ground,
not coming from the helicopters or up in the building, or whatever, MGM. Right. So it's, if they can control those witnesses, much like the Dealey Plaza witnesses, which over 100 ended up dying in very weird ways in the few years after 1963. This, a school and everything, and which you had mentioned, like, it's right in Lockheed Martin's backyard. I'm not saying that they were associated with it, but it has been theorized, not by myself, but by other people over the years, that Columbine, like Littleton, that area, Charlie, and maybe since you're right there, maybe you could speak to this, because I've always wondered, the idea of a safe house in the CIA, right, for agents or whoever, former, past, a safe house where literally they can find safety, right, from whoever. I've heard before that Littleton itself is a safe community where former or even maybe present people can raise families and kind of look on each other, not in a spy kind of way, but not unlike that either, but to make sure, like, because people throughout their careers, they have sensitive information and activities that they've had to participate in, a way for them to kind of monitor each other and make sure that, you know, their noses are clear, is if they're all kind of, like, almost a witness protection kind of community, which also exists.
I've heard of that for NATO. I've heard of that as like NATO, like a city where the vast majority of people that work there are, and live there are like, or that interact there are all NATO people that just get kind of moved around and then they go off on deals. I wouldn't be surprised if Littleton had that. Like I said, there's a Lockheed Martin facility not too far from me. And I'm on, and for those that geographically, Littleton is just on the, it's just a suburb of Denver. So. For me to get from my house to downtown Denver is 40 minutes or so, you know, just because of traffic. But, you know, they're on the outside. If you've ever been to anyone that's ever been, seen like Red Rock, the concert venue that U2 made famous with Sunday Bloody Sunday and all that, that's all right there. It's all in the same area. So that's I have questions about it. I know some people one of my sponsors, Ken, from C60 Purple Power, he's been living there for a long, long time. He's got amazing stories about some of the deep military fuckery that's going on there underground and things like that. Oh, he tells a story about going to get to need a file from some place, and he wound up in some basement level somewhere, and there were cars that were driving down there underground, and everything. He's like, where am I? You know, so I think that there might be something to that the city is maybe filled with spooks, and it wouldn't surprise me. I don't know. I don't have any firsthand experience like that. Obviously, I don't know anyone, and maybe if I do know them, I don't know that they're I don't know. As far as I know, I don't know anyone. But the airport is sketchy. You know, the vicinity, you know, it's a safe place, too. It's not like it's a scary place. So it also makes me think when you're talking about cleanup crews and yes. taking care of witnesses and things like that, the murder of two Columbine students on Valentine's Day 2000 at Subway.
My friend Jen was friends with them, too. Yeah,
they were. Assassinated. Yes, there was no robbery going on, or
caught for that. There was a witness at some point saw someone scurrying away, and their depiction or the sketch of this person kind of matched one of the possible eight shooters that were identified that day at Columbine.
Interesting.
So it is possible that this other person, and like I said, I don't want to name them because they were never convicted of anything.
Of course.
They just happened to come up in all these different interview statements, though. I mean, I don't know what, you know what I mean? Like, it can't be, I don't believe in coincidences, you know what I mean? Like,
no, neither do I. Not at this high a level. But what would the point be? I think I can maybe work it out, but.
There were
to
people,
just be two instead of six or eight or whatever.
Well, you brought, and I hope this doesn't trigger anybody, but this, I went back to smoking, which is not a good thing at all. But anyway, right now, it's just, I have all these things coming. You had mentioned NATO, and kind of, well, John Quinn, the news hawk, he wrote about how. And I saw stills, and, you know, this is from the mid-2000s or whatever, on a conspiracy website that no longer exists. I can't find it in the Wayback Machine. They scrubbed the hell out of this. But it showed stills from helicopter footage taken, like news helicopter footage taken from that day of a blue van or like a kind of a SWAT-like truck with NATO written on the side of it, and the NATO shield as like the front of the truck, like a guard, you know how they would, the batter ram kind of thing, and some of these vehicles would have. And I never was able to see like those photographs ever again, but John Quinn had written a whole thing called Horrors in Littleton at the time, and I think it was on theconformist.com with a K. You could find that around that time, too, by Robert Sterling. He posted Mr. Quinn's article about that. And he talks about all these witnesses, like, emailing him at the time of seeing footage of what I just described, of a NATO van or truck seen at the beginning of the shooting. And then never seen or talked about ever again, which I've come across that in other things like the TWA missile videos that hundreds, if not thousands, saw that first night. The JFK Jr. thing, there were witnesses that Don Jeffries and I have been trying to find for years that saw his plane explode right as it was above Martha's Vineyard.
Yeah.
They haven't been, and Shepard Smith, who also comes into this same article, Shepard Smith talked about one of those witnesses being supposed to be a wedding member, a wedding, like that's what John Jr. was flying to, Rory, his cousin's wedding. And one of these witnesses, Shepard Smith, said that on the air, and I can't find this footage either, they don't have it anymore, but on his Fox News show at the time, he talked about knowing who one of the witnesses to the plane explosion of JFK Jr. was. Shepard Smith is also cited by Robert Morningstar, another like researcher that goes way back to JFK, who I've actually talked to as well about this. He remembered, and he was cited in Mr. Quinn's article about the interview that Shepard Smith did with Matt LePue, who is no longer with us, and he was a crucial witness to things in the kitchen area. Like, his father was Wayne DePue, who was a part of the Jefferson County Police Department. And Robert Morningstar, as cited in John Quinn's article, talks about how during the interview on that Saturday, because like all these things, Columbine happened on that Tuesday, the 20th. Mm-hmm. That Saturday, Fox News, Shepard Smith did a special called, was something like Terror in the Rockies, I think it was. And he talked to Matt LePew on the air about what his father did. And supposedly, because I can't get the footage, but supposedly he told Shepard Smith that his father, he inferred it, I guess, that his father possibly killed Harrison Klebold in the library. That footage hasn't been seen ever again either.
Really?
Just like that was Shepard Smith, and it's John Quinn, NewsHawk. Anyone, like I said, you go out and you look, you type that in. Use DuckDuckGo because Google is crap now, but DuckDuckGo is better because Google hides this stuff now, like really bad. And write in John Quinn, NewsHawk, Columbine, and you'll see the article I'm talking about at the very end, Robert Morningstar. And anyway, I went way off the beaten path, but I want to tell you one more thing before I forget, Charlie. You know, another Wayne, Wayne Harris, right? Mm-hmm. He, after he retired out of the military, and he moved his family to Littleton and everything, he ended up working for Flight Simulator. That was responsible. That was the company responsible, supposedly, for training a bunch of the 9/11 hijackers.
Really?
And also, in Eric Harris's diary, they mentioned the week after Columbine, the sheriff, Sheriff John Stone, who just passed away like a year ago, I believe, he gave a press conference about how Harris wrote about how him and Klebold were going to blow up the school, shoot all the survivors come trying to escape, then escape into the neighboring neighborhoods, shoot anybody that would get in their way as they made their way to whatever airport was nearby. I don't know if he mentioned Denver itself specifically. Mm-hmm. And that their idea, Eric Harris's idea, was that him and Klebold would hijack an airliner and then crash it into New York City.
No way.
And then Stephen King, after 9/11, would bring up this exact fact or that press conference after in his articles about how dare Condoleezza Rice and George Bush and all these others say that it was the idea of crashing a plane into a building. The Columbine killers are writing it in their journals like a year and a half before. And then you find out that Flight Safety is the same company. And I'm not saying Wayne Harris caused 9/11. I'm just saying there's weird parallels with all these events where there's weird dot. Maybe I'm reaching, but that's weird crap.
I'll tell you what reminded me of a Columbine-type situation. And again, it goes back to what you were saying, like finding this footage and then maybe it disappears. I haven't looked for it recently, but I remember watching it with my own eyes. Parkland, a helicopter camera footage down, shooting down, stationary helicopter above the school, shooting down, watching guys load two huge big black duffel bags into the back of a truck and then driving off as fast as guys in black loading up that
happened at Columbine too, Charlie.
I'm sure it did. That's
and
why
there's footage of that. There's a
footage of
getaway truck, for lack of a better term. There is an official, like a whole bunch of these sniper types in a van behind the school where all the media was on the other side of the school. But for some reason, this guy was able to get access behind and he's filming them getting away, looking right at them like as the van passes them and everything. And it's eerie. I don't know. I'm just, you know, maybe so, I'm reaching.
Yeah. Well, so this is so if that is in case. If what we're seeing is in fact what's really going on, then there appears to be a sort of strategy to this. Get some young kids to shoot up a school, get them weaponized in the brain, give them access to the guns, give them access to the ideas, maybe fuck with them like psychologically, chemically or something to get them really, really traumatized and ready to go. And then when it's time for the actual shooting, and you send them out there to do the shooting, a parallel team goes with them and make sure that the person is on target and then make sure that that person is getting blamed for it while they do all the indiscriminate killing, which would explain why the Parkland, why you, there's interviews with a girl at Parkland. And she's like, I was talking. She's like, he came in and shot up the hallway. She's like, I don't know how he did that. I was just talking to him 2 minutes before that. And he wasn't.
Can't find that girl anymore, Charlie. We tried. Can't find her anymore.
Yeah.
That was on InfoWars, like the first day, and take that for what it is. But, they played it there, and I still have that clip. And she's like walking with Nicholas Cruz, and she goes, oh, I thought that I could have sworn that someone like yourself would have been the thing. And you can hear, she said she could hear gunshots in the distance going on.
And that, and I would have assumed it would have been you. Yeah. Hey, yeah. You're here. I hear shooting going on. I assumed you would be the one doing the shooting.
And then he goes to have like a Big Mac at McDonald's and just sits around after.
Yeah. And gets arrested and charged with all this. And then, of course, confesses. It's.
Yeah.
We're starting to notice patterns. And of course, with these things, they're not copy. I mean, they're not identical, but you see
There's a lot of
similarities here. Yeah. Multiple shooters and witnesses. Telling stories about multiple shooters, the witnesses that tell the stories about multiple shooters end up dead, like they did in Vegas, like they did
usually. Well,
in
like Vegas, usually the perpetrators, to kind of solidify their guilt, either or both, either their homes and their vehicles, like right outside where the tragedy happens, are usually wired to the hilt with all kinds of explosives and stuff, because they even tried that with a Paddock too. They said his car was filled with explosives, right? And even the Trump shooting guy, right, they said he had explosives. Like, why? And people were like, why don't they talk about what was he planning on? Like, was he planning on escaping and then bombing a bunch of stuff? No, that's to solidify guilt, like every single time. And it happened with the guy in Colorado, which Aurora, which is also has connections with Columbine, with people that were in the theater next to the theater that actually got shot up. There were some Columbine survivors.
Yeah, the Batman movie theater. For those that remember the Aurora shooter, Aurora, it's the town that has the Venezuelans that have moved into the apartment complex. It's the shit of Denver.
Holmes there, the Pat, I'll just say it right here. I don't care anymore. There's a lot of evidence. The Patsy, right? Mm-hmm. His apartment was wired up, but apparently he had the decency to tell the cops, like, oh, be careful when you enter my apartment. And he's the one that gave them the heads up to not enter the apartment. And it was wired with all kinds of ammo he couldn't possibly got by himself. He had like a paper trail, like a Lee Harvey Oswald post office box type scenario, like going on as well. And I'm like, come on, they're not even trying anymore.
I know. It's really, they are not sending their best and brightest, but of course they don't even really need to, because the general public, they've done the calculations. They will believe just about anything. As long as the official story is fast and then it names somebody, then they can figure it out after.
Well, people forgot about that, and Sandy Hook happened five months later, and then Aurora, no one was talking about that, except at the time there was the idea that the two fathers of the father of Adam Lanza and of Holmes were part of the LIBOR scandal, which I've never been able to really make that connection, but that was what alternative media was pushing right after Sandy Hook, and they're trying to connect that too. Yeah.
Interesting. So
a lot of disinfo stuff with a lot of this.
For sure.
Events. Yeah.
Well, I wonder, because a lot of times they don't do these shootings necessarily for nothing, although it does have a sort of strategy of tension, Operation Gladio feel to it. But what, a lot of times, if you look back on post Sandy Hook or post any of these shootings, there's gun control legislation that's just happens right in the aftermath of that. Was there any sort of gun control legislation or any kind of stuff that was going on after this?
They ended up having they were giving Charlton Heston and the NRA a bunch of crap because they wanted to come to Denver, I believe, like in the next week or the next couple of weeks. And they were trying to prevent that from happening. And I don't have the exact legislation in front of me, but I think the governor at the time was proposing something like right after. And I don't think it was successful, or maybe some of it could have been. I wish I had that in front of me right now. But I think just looking at the way these things go down, I think it was more of a cultural operation in terms of, you know, censorship on the internet. They wanted to clamp down right after because they were trying to say that, you know, Harris was getting materials like the Anarchist Cookbook very easily. And that's very well possible. But it was a free speech kind of thing. We saw that after Sandy Hook, too. We're not even allowed to say Sandy Hook because you and I might be sued for billions of trillions of dollars now. We're just saying the name because there were children involved. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. These trigger things or whatever. But at the time, yes, I do agree that there is, if they wanted to ban guns, they would have already done it. Yeah. If that was the main objective, Charlie, like that's how I feel just researching all this stuff for years and years. If they wanted to do that, they could have already. I really do feel like that. Because if you look at the stuff that like DARPA has developed over the years, do you think a bunch of lead bullets are going to scare like the powers that be? Like, they got some sophisticated shit, you know what I mean? I mean, look at even things like January 6th, you know, or even just weapons they have against people that want to protest, you know, even just peacefully. They'll make you crap yourself, literally.
the recent Trump rally, there's evidence that the people behind him are saying that they were all feeling sick afterwards, right? So were they?
And there were people at Columbine that said they had this nausea. Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. So
some weird stuff. And it's right in Lockheed Martin's backyard. And I'm not saying that they had anything to do with it, but I'm just pointing out the fact that they're right there.
Dude, if I start talking about how great it is that everybody's trans and that we should all just get on, you'll know that they've aimed the laser beam at my forehead right in my office window and that they've used it against me. But
the one they shoot from the Freedom Tower in Lower Manhattan, right?
You want to know what a treat it was for me, Chris, to walk around Lower Manhattan last year, the weekend before 9/11, with Billy Ray Valentine and Tony Arterburn, and have Billy Ray give us the guided tour of that. Man, you haven't lived till you've had a guided tour of the 9/11 rubble at midnight on a Friday when no one's around by Billy Ray Valentine. You can say, they came in from this direction, and then this came here, and this was where Building 7 is. And when you see that big cloud, it was coming from this, you know. So
yes,
it was like reliving or sort of like walking through. It must be like the same as for somebody that's gone to Daily Plaza and is standing there and is going, all right, well, where would it have looked like that? You've been there and done that. I haven't done that yet.
I'm like, this is way too small for what's in that film, the Zapruder film. Like, it is way too small, like that area. Everything is compacted. In the Zapruder film, right, the grass behind the limo and everything on the other side of the street, it looks like it could go on for, like, days. You know what I mean? Yeah. When you're there, it's like, oh, you walk across the X, which I think they got rid of. There was the X marks, the spot in the street where he got shot and everything. You walk it literally, you're on the other side, like in a second. And I'm like, wow, like distortion. And there could have been all kinds of different angles from the storm drain, from the triple underpass, all over the place there. And also, you know, something that mirrors Dealey Plaza. Most people, when in the witness statements at the beginning of the shooting at Columbine, they thought it was firecrackers. They literally heard firecrackers going off. And then in the evidence log, there was like burnt firecrackers, like a diversion thing. The same people in Dealey Plaza, right before the first shot where JFK reaches up to his throat, witnesses there said that they heard and smelled like fireworks going off too. So that made me like, that's just like one example of these possible parallels where people hear the fireworks go off almost like it's a signal. Because at Columbine, there were people that were seen and reported on, and there was footage, Charlie, that disappeared. There was a shooter on the roof shooting down at everybody as a diversion to keep the cops away at first too. And then that shooter that was on the roof disappeared because he wouldn't fit the timeline of Harris Klebold.
Right.
And there was shooter on the east side, too. Like, all the entrances and exits at the beginning seemed to be covered by, you know, either former or current trench coat mafia dupes. Because some of these other ones, not the ones that had black ski masks on that were acting all military-like, or even the guy with Klebold that my friend Jen saw. These other teenage boys that, you know, had a lot of trouble, you know, like bad trouble backgrounds and things like that. They seemed to be the other shooters at other entrances and exits that were kind of not only confusing the issue for later on when witnesses would talk about who they saw or who they thought they saw, but almost in a strategic fashion too, like to keep the honest cops. I'm not saying like that the whole Jefferson County Police Force was in on it or whatever, but at least the higher ups had to have known what was going on at a certain point, because it became federalized at a point. And there were tanks that my friend Jen even like encountered, military tanks, like on down the street, that kept people away for the next few days afterwards while people were cleaning up the school and everything. So there was a military kind of bent to this, besides the NATO stuff, which I can't prove because I don't have the footage, but a lot of people saw what I was talking about, you know, maybe the stills that I had witnessed on the internet, you know, maybe that was just a bunch of horse shit. I don't know.
Could be.
But there were tanks there that people that lived there said that they experienced like a blockade of like, why are you need tanks outside of a school shooting?
I'm surprised they didn't level the school. Didn't bulldoze
Well, that
the school.
Became a thing after, like with Sandy Hook and things like that. At the time, there was actually 3 years ago, 4 years ago now, there was mention that they were thinking about just tearing down the actual school and rebuilding. Mm. But like, why so long after the fact? You know what
exactly.
I mean?
Exactly.
So I don't know, but that.
Well, in not only just in the case of Sandy Hook, I mean they didn't just bulldoze the school, they bulldozed Adam Lanza's mother's house too, which is incompatible with logic when you're dealing with. I mean, think of how many crime scenes there are in America, how many people get shot on a day-to-day basis and horrible stuff like that. Every day we read about that on every single day. They don't bulldoze their houses after they pull the body out, but they did with that. And I was wondering why it didn't happen with Columbine, because it seemed like maybe in the aftermath they thought, oh, well, this is something we should do going forward. Right. Maybe Columbine was a practice. So it's funny to me that like, you could be involved in this mass shooting, mass murder, right? But if you happen to be somebody whose entire job was to guard, I don't know, the very back door and shoot anybody that comes in or out of this, and because that was your job and you're not one of the two main suspects, they've basically created a narrative that tells you that they're never going to look for you as a suspect, because in order to look for you and arrest you, it would mean that the narrative that they've crafted is fake, is not true, that there's more than just two shooters, right? So if you're any of these other people, you basically got away with murder and will continue to get away with murder, because in order for you to be held accountable, they would have to admit that the story of two shooters is not true. And if that's untrue, then it opens up everybody for lawsuits. And my guess is that there's a lot of lawsuits.
Right?
Kind of like Building 7.
You bring up Building 7 and you come out and say, you know what, yeah, we had to take it down for whatever reason. The way we were able to wire it within, like, what, an eight-hour period is, you know, we can't disclose that technology that we have, you know, some bullshit excuse that they would use. But then they would have to say, yeah, even the towers, yeah, there's something weird about the way they came down, too. Then the whole thing starts to fall apart.
Right.
So you're right with that. And, originally it was reported that there were 25 to 28 confirmed deaths at Columbine, by the way.
Really?
Sheriff John Stone said that at the press conference they were confirmed. And the only way you confirm that is if you have like a medical examiner, right? Like confirm it. He said at the press conference at 4 o'clock that day.
You could borrow the medical examiner from Sandy Hook, the guy that looks like he's out gone now. Run.
Yeah, he's gone. Yeah, he's dead now. Wayne.
Wayne Carver.
Wayne Carver, yeah.
Wacky Wayne Carver. He's my favorite. He was my favorite guy from all the. My favorite guy from the casting crew, the NATO casting crew.
Allegedly, right.
But yeah,
if you look at that body count, Charlie, and bad habits die hard, I guess. But No, this is heavy material subject matter, but here's the thing. If you had other shooters that were not a part, you know, like other operators that were not a part of your official scenario? Could it be, could we theorize that maybe some of these additional bodies, like from the 25 to 28 confirmed down to 15, including the two teenagers that we said did this, mm-hmm. could it be that some of these other bodies that were confirmed could have been other operators that didn't know they were supposed to be taken out, or even like witnesses, like other kids that maybe saw things that there would be no way to shut them up on?
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
what
sure.
I'm
yeah.
thinking.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. You assemble the team to pull the big bank heist once you've cleaned out the vault. There's a team of five before everybody gets in the car. The leader makes sure that he executes the other four guys.
Well, you got the Joker in the Dark Knight. The Joker in the Dark Knight, like the bank heist. He has everybody instructions to kill the other guy, and then he takes off in the bus with all the money. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah. It's not unlike something like that.
So they might have tied up some loose ends of some of the shooters there and claimed that they were victims, right, and made them out to be victims, moved their bodies around?
There's an article I have where there's a quote from a student witness that said that they walked around a corner during the chaos, and they witnessed an adult woman, a teacher, who was reaching down to get on the phone with 911 that got shot point blank in the head. She's not a part of the official body count, whoever this person was, or even the injuries outside of the triage afterwards. And let me bring up one other thing that's always been very creepy to me. Isaiah Scholes, he was the black kid that they were able to kind of craft this narrative that Klebold and Harris, you know, they were white supremacists, Nazis and things, and then people don't realize, you know, Klebold was Jewish. But that aside, Isaiah Scholes, a lot of the, a good portion of the witnesses in the library who were in the library for quite a while before they got to the cameras and the media outside, they said that right before Isaiah was executed, that Harris and Klebold were saying all kinds of, you know, nasty stuff like N-word this, N-word that. And, I always wanted to see what a N-word's brains look like, right? And then they're quoted as saying that Isaiah was executed by being shot point blank in the face, in the head, right? Mm-hmm. And that these comments after the fact that they kept pushing on TV were, you know, just they were like, yeah, they were savage and everything, and whoever was responsible, you know, whether it was the two of them, and maybe I'm just an idiot, you know, and whoever was responsible could have been saying these horrible things and probably were. It doesn't make sense when you look at Isaiah's autopsy, because they say that the cause of death, and this is available online in the documents too, that he was never shot in the head. He was never, no blunt force trauma to the face. He was shot in the chest and in the shoulder. So how would they be seeing his brains and making comments if he was never shot in the head?
They wouldn't. It's the media.
So afterwards, right, yeah. I'm speculating now. Did whoever the part of the cleanup crew was, maybe that military looking guy, you know, the possible handler with Klebold or whatever, were people, you know, terrorizing these kids before letting them go out, like escape outside, and then start making these statements about what they just experienced, like in the library and stuff? Were they telling them, like, were they threatening them possible, like their families or whatever? You better say these fucking words, like these type of things to hit home how bad, how really, you know, I'm not saying Harris and Klebold were saints or whatever. They were two teenage boys that had a lot of trouble apparently, but maybe it wasn't even them. Like, that's what I'm trying to say, is like whoever was actually shooting, because some people in the library said that the shooters had black ski masks on and things.
Right.
And that they couldn't tell whether it was Harris or Klebold. So that was the other issue too. And then there was a guy, there was another shooter that was guarding the entrance to the library while a lot of these executions were going on inside the library. But that camera footage is nowhere to be found either. There was a camera in front of the library entrance. There's a camera in front of the school that would have saw who was bringing in these big duffel bags, supposedly with all these bombs and everything. You know, you would have saw, it would have confirmed what my friend Jen said. Like, she saw the a guy that she recognized that was named by dozens of other people, including mm-hmm. Kristen Krueger, of being this other person who wasn't convicted of anything. So I won't even say his name, but it's easily findable, like mm-hmm. online. And he was like tall enough and big enough to be able to carry this huge duffel bag before the shooting began. So, I don't even know, like, there's so much to unpack with this, but 9/11 happened and everyone kind of forgot about Columbine, except for obviously the survivors, but anyone who was asking questions, like Dave McGowan, writing articles like an anatomy of a school shooting, people, like alternative people at the time, like, no one was listening to them anymore about these weird oddities and like even the reporting at the time of like, you know, like Isaiah Scholes, like that, it wasn't even something that was brought up by anyone until, I don't want to give myself too much kudos here, but I mean, people have mentioned, like, isn't it weird that they kept saying he was shot point blank in the head, but his autopsy says otherwise? And why is he, you know, these nasty comments being attributed to how they could see his brains if they really couldn't, if that's not what happened? So it's just, I'm telling you, it's an enigma. And then 9/11 wiped everyone's curiosity away from that for a while. You know?
Did we ever get any bullet forensics or analysis, shell casings to point to the fact that there might have been more than just two guns?
Well, the idea that the
guns, you know, I mean, well, if you've got bullets that are used from four different guns, and you've got two guys that have the two guns they're using, then you start to ask questions. Were there forensics?
Yeah, and guess what? There's a whole bunch of files that, just like JFK, are under seal until like the year 2029, I believe. Why would that happen with just an ordinary school shooting?
It's a very unusual response to just an ordinary school shooting, was to put all the put a section of the information on, you know, lock it up or bulldoze a house or this or that. You know, right. There's a lot of things that go
on. In the case of Sandy Hook, they made the demo guys sign gag orders. What the hell were they going to see?
Right.
Exactly. That would, you know, that would make them say, hey, you need to sign a confidentiality.
They were going to see that it was a school that was not in
that it had use. Black mold, possibly, like we see in the footage of the roof from the helicopter. Like, no one's ever talked to, like, when you can't even bring it up. So no one, I can understand why no one, I mean, there have been people over the years that brought up things like, well, it would look like rusted shards of metal out back. Like, that wouldn't be like for, you know.
There were no handicap parking.
Ramps.
It was a code violation. It was an old school that was used as a demo for whatever sort of things they needed.
A possible drill. I'm just speculating here because I wasn't there, but just to say it, could have been a FEMA drill. That there are articles and evidence out there that these type of drills were going on at the time in Connecticut, even like I think 15 miles away around
L-366 was the drill that was being run at the same time. That was simulating a school shooting. And so I wonder, do we know, were there any drills that were happening in Columbine?
Oh yes. Yeah. That also comes up too, that there was a drill, there was a school shooting drill a week before. About just almost to the day, a week before.
What a coincidence. Interesting. I'm surprised that school drill didn't go live. Or maybe, I don't know.
Maybe it just, they were having a follow-up drill the next week on that day. Kind of like when you look at 9/11, Webster Tarpley. If you look at his work, he details well over 100 coincidental war games going on Tuesday, September 11, 2001, at the same exact time. Yeah. So,
Oh, man.
It's a lot. I know.
It's a lot, man. This is so much. I love talking to you because I know I go, you know, you go, there's the surface level, there's
I
the
go
conspiracy
on
level,
too.
And then there's Chris Graves level, which is well below that, man. And I appreciate
that's the OCD level. Yeah.
Well, your weaponized OCD is to our benefit.
Yeah.
Colin Bynes, one of them, man. I think that it sets us, you know, it's important to know a little bit about all of these events. Columbine was one that I didn't get into too much because it really was happening at a time when I hadn't been.
Yeah, you weren't like kind of like, I don't want to say woke because that's not what I was. You weren't awakened.
I wasn't aware to that. But that was a couple years later. That was when they started selling me the Iraq war. And they were like, you know, because of 9/11. And I was like, what?
Right.
Well,
Columbine was the 9/11 of these shootings because it always gets brought up and always either the patsy or the real deal. They always have a connection where they were fascinated by Harrison Klebold. You always see them cite that. They're always ground zero, pardon the expression, of these shootings. And they always say that their followers were these, like Adam Lanza, like Holmes, like the Tucson guy, or Lautner, or whatever. They all try to say that they all loved the work of Harrison Klebold. They always tie them back to it. But I think that there was a reason why they put so much spotlight on this one particular incident. Because it was going to be the ground zero for the future of these type of events where they have, you know, usually now it's just a designated one lone nut Oswald type character, right? But the thing I always noticed, Charlie, and I have all these other links to, like, do you remember the Navy Yard shooting and Fort Hood and the Wisconsin Sikh shooting?
Yeah.
In all of those, there were multiple locations going, even Virginia Tech. There's between 2 to 4 operators actually doing the actual shooting. And then you got the one lone, you know, gunman that they sacrifice, you know, whether he was a real nut or he just had problems and they used that for the benefit or whatever, that's speculation. And I mean, it's not speculation that people do see like 2 or 3 to 4 in the case of the Sikh shooting. That there were 4 white guys in military garb that it was reported on the news at the time. Alex Jones did a whole thing. I don't like to cite him too much, but I will give credit where credit is due. But there were witnesses to the Sikh shooting.
San Bernardino
Wisconsin.
As well.
San Bernardino. There were 4 guys, 3 to 4.
They saw military age guys that were jacked, that were doing the shooting. And,
then it became an Arab couple.
Then it became an Arab couple.
That
was the one. That was the conspiracy.
Yeah.
That I was able to pull. I was able to really get my mom on board with understanding how these things go, because I remember she had come over to my house and we were sitting down and we had the TV off. Turn the TV on. So neither of us had been watching it, and it was the San Bernardino thing that was – it was going on, and we were looking at it, and I muted it. And I remember I turned to my mom, and I said, you want to play a game with me? And she's like, sure.
Yeah,
and I said, I'm going to name 5 things about this event right here that I don't know anything about, can't know any possible thing about. But in the next week, I'm going to tell you what they are, and then we'll figure it. We'll see if it happens the way I said it was. And the things I said were, it's going to be pinned on somebody who's Muslim, but there will be reports that there will have been military people doing the actual shooting. That happened immediately. That I said that they will be said to have been armed, but it'll be kind of preposterous. I said they'll leave a manifesto. They left the manifesto. And I said that the media and that the police would screw up the crime scene to a point where a lot of the stuff was sort of, you know, unusable. Yes. And I said, the last thing is they're going to end up dead. Whoever the people are going to end up dead. And because dead people don't talk. And she said, okay, cool. And so we watched as that played out. And every single thing that I said would happen because you can tell, you get an idea of like what the pattern is. And when I, when I took a look at that one, I just said, this is, I'm not saying these people aren't actually getting killed. Of course, you know, there's real killings going on. I'm just saying right. that the person who did it, or the people who did it, or the radicalized Muslim couple who's firing an AK-47, she's 90 pounds and
right,
firing
right.
an AK-47 accurate. I mean, the whole thing was just.
Sarah Lanza carried in all that stuff, right?
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Adam Lanza, 112 pounds.
Yeah.
Carrying all these guns and ammunition. I love that the media said this, and I thought it was hysterical. Not a single person clearly fact-checked this, but they said that when they discovered Adam Lanza's car, they found a shotgun in the glove compartment. I challenge you to explain. You don't have to be a gun expert. You don't have to be anything. Just somebody that has a functioning brain. How do you fit a shotgun in a glove compartment? Please elaborate and take. You know, that was the
like
sort
the Jetson,
of story.
It's like the Jetsons car, or they right. pull up into a suitcase or whatever. You know what I mean?
Well, that's that. I'm willing to.
Or the thing else in the moon landing or whatever. The moon buggy. They said that
the
that technology
buggy, yeah.
like got. Like thrown away, they can
yeah,
do
yeah.
Jetson
we have
it.
The technology for
right, right. Fold up the car, the moon buggy, and make it a suitcase like the Jetsons. You know what? I actually have I have photos of them taking what they said was the main murder weapon out of the trunk late at night, and it was helicopter footage, coincidentally, of them taking out Lanza's AR-15, I think, and it was locked in the trunk the whole time. What the hell does that mean? You know what I mean? Like,
well, everybody knows that before right. you start a school shooting, you lock right. your gear in the trunk and then right. never use it and then let the feds find it. Yeah,
Or like Holmes locking himself in his own car and then just waiting for the cops to show up and leaving his combat gear on the sidewalk.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Part of this, it makes me feel
part of
like
it makes me think it's like Don, my friend Don would say, it's like calling cards where they want yeah. people to know exactly what it is without them coming out and actually saying it. Like a pristine magic bullet that went through two people. It's pristine. A yeah. passport survives when yes. steel melts. Right? Like, come on. You know?
Yeah. The messaging is almost, it's almost like a. Wink,
it's a wink,
you know?
Right? But like we're like, the stink eye because they have contempt for whoever they are. They, you know, they don't like us, but they want us to know, you know, or whoever, you know, is interested or is using their brain and not TikTok videos or whatever, yeah. you know.
Oh man!
But the Columbine thing. Well, one of the last things I failed to mention earlier that it was supposedly started at 11:15 in the morning, right?
Mm-hmm.
The shooting was reported by witnesses on the phone that were calling out, like people outside the school. There were even parents being pushed away by the cops that were trying to enter the school because there was some kind of stand down going on with the local mm-hmm. cops. And there were even cops that were getting pissed because they had offspring that were students inside. Mm-hmm. They were being told by the higher ups to back off too. So there was shooting that was reported all the way up until like 3:45. For an event that was supposed to end at 12:08 with their suicides in the library. So who else was shooting and, you know, for the rest of that time? And it was being reported on throughout, wow. like all the way up until basically that press conference by Sheriff John Stone talking about how there were 25 to 28 confirmed casualties in the building. So I don't know.
Well, yeah. I think this one requires another, you know, for those of us out here who remember it but don't know the details yeah. too well, boy, Columbine requires another, a second look. It's worth it, huh, to take a peek at some of this.
There's a lot more there, yeah, and someday I'd like to just unload everything that I've come across and then just be done with it, you know, because,
yeah.
like I said, that really can't happen until some of these other documents and evidence is not released for the next yeah. couple of years, because that requires a Warren Commission like secrecy apparently for just your average school shooting, which also points to the fact that tells me that this was supposed to be like the big one of these kind of operations, you know,
yeah.
all the attention and not the attention to other suspects that got poo-pooed in the mainstream, if yeah. even mentioned at all.
Yeah.
But there were reports like, oh, there was a third shooter that all these witnesses are talking about, but then that went away. when everything's solidified, you know.
It's funny how they're like, well, we have the narrative, we're fine. Yeah. You're like, no, but we've got other guys that are guilty for it. They're like, well, but the story's written.
We have enough.
That's, you know, all right.
Those other guys, yeah, you don't know what. Yeah, they don't matter. You know, it doesn't matter. We have it. Everyone's safe now, you know.
Well, yeah. I tell you, man, you're the best in the business. I appreciate it coming yes. on to do this. And for those that want to support your work or maybe even throw some money and support you financially a little ways, what's the best way for people to do that?
Well, I appreciate you saying that, Charlie. I have a Twitter account, and that is at C Graves Mask Guy, and I have a link tree right at the top of the page, and that leads people to all my past shows and stuff on my Rumble channel and everything, and I've done a lot of shows, maybe too much for people out there, and it's not all conspiracy stuff. Right. But at the bottom of that, I have my Cash App and my PayPal thing, and right now I'm just doing as many deliveries as possible to just keep my car going, basically. Yeah. So I appreciate all the help. I appreciate you, sir.
I appreciate you. We appreciate you. The alternative media community appreciates you, and the listeners may not know it. They may not know that a lot of the information that has filled their brains over the years has come due to the work that you've done, but it has. And if they are in a position to support good people financially, I think this audience is up for it. So if you guys are inclined, if you've got more money than time, support Chris Graves with your money. If you've got more time than money, then support him by sharing his amazing work with the people that you know out there on your social medias. We appreciate it as well. That's Chris Graves, everybody. He's the absolute best. If you want to connect with me, macroaggressions.io is the website. That's the place to do it. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you again soon.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.